Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
You know, an education might not have all the answers to the questions life throws at us. But over the years, I have learned where to find them. The incredible women in my life. I'm Masaba Gupta, and on this show, I'm taking you along as I talk to women I admire. We talk about our work, our lives, and even some of the odd life hacks we've picked up along the way. From Luminary, this is How I Masaba. You know, when I was younger, I played professional tennis. And at the time, I was pretty serious about it. I worked at it, hoping one day it would become more than just a hobby. And clearly, that didn't work out. So the biggest game that I played was perhaps when I was around 17 years old. So I packed all my best outfits and, you know, went with my didi at the time and traveled by train, which was all very exciting. At that time, I was playing a girl who was, I think she was local and she was very, very good. And I remember it was in that moment, in that match, where I realized how mentally weak I was. And I say this because I think all of us have that one moment in our lives where we know that there's something that's not working for us. It's actually working against us. So that's what led me to talk about mental toughness and how important it is if you are a professional sports person. And I do feel like it's something that we don't give enough attention to. It's something I have in common with my guest today. We both knew what it was like to play important tennis matches when we were 17. I had my tournament in Maharashtra and she won the doubles title at the juniors of this little tournament called Wimbledon. Through her career, she's almost single-handedly taken the game of tennis to countless Indian girls, showing them what is possible, inspiring a generation to follow in her footsteps and forge their own destinies. And today, she is talking to me. Here's Sania Mirza. So, Sania, I was just doing your intro before you came on, and I don't know if you even know this, but I am a failed tennis player. Do you know this, by the way?
I know that you used to play tennis, yeah.
Yeah, well, I failed.
I follow you on social media, so I got it from there.
Yeah, that's all the rage that I have now for not having made it that I play now. And I'm like, maybe now I can just play for fun, no pressure and all of that. So you did announce that this season will be your last.
Yeah.
And you've made the decision to retire. And I know a lot of athletes talk about when it's time, you know, and all of that. But for you personally, it's leaving behind such a big part of your life, right? That's almost everything that you do in your adult life, right?
I mean, it's going to be hard because I already had a preview of it when I was pregnant. And I was out for like a year and a half where I was completely away from the game. And to be honest, Masaba, I was okay. I thought I would be worse, but I was okay. I felt fine. I felt that priorities change in life. There are certain things that change in life. Circumstances change in life, which demand and call for a change in what you're doing sometimes. And for me, it's obviously my son. You know, it's just something to leave him for 25, 30 weeks a year. It's just not something that I can,
I can
think of doing. Because for me, being a parent at this point is a little bit more important than getting back to being number one in the world, if that makes sense. And I know that might sound crazy to some people because I'm 24 in the world still, but the fact is that that is how I feel about it, you know. So In fact, yesterday I was having a conversation with one of the people who works at my office, and he was like, "Well, you're still close to 20 in the world. Don't you think, you know, you want to play another year?" And I was like, "Sure. I mean, I can play another year or two, but like, do I want to like lose out on my child being four again? No. I mean, that's what my priority is. It wasn't that 5 years ago, but it is that now. So, it is also my body. I mean, I'm not young for a tennis player. I'm 36. I've had a bunch of surgeries. Honestly, there's no one reason for it. 30 years of monotony of doing the same thing. You know,
it's time there are for days. Change.
Yeah, there are days when you don't want to go and put your body through pain. There are days when you don't want to wake up in the morning and be like, "Oh my God, I got to go for 6 hours today," and you know, like completely abuse my body here. But those days are more often for me in the last couple of years than they have been ever. And those days always happen, but the days that I want to work are lesser and fewer as I'm getting older.
But that's great that you accept that. And I remember Serena Williams had a great quote about her retirement. She said, "Let's not call it that. Let's call it evolution. I'm evolving and doing things that are possibly more important to me than tennis at this point." Is there anything ever that would be as important to you as tennis, except for your baby, of course, but anything else that you see yourself doing?
So to be very honest with you, I think the only thing that will probably be a little bit more important is to give back the knowledge that I have and the experience that I have had over the last 30 years. To be able to be the only woman to have achieved all the things that I've been able to achieve has taken some special effort and some special luck and a special hard work to get here, not just as me, but the whole unit that was involved in me being where I was and where I am. So to pass on the knowledge, and hence these academies where I'm able to at least try and give back to the sport that has given me so much, you know, and tennis is all I know. Tennis is all that I've done. And, you know, I may seem like I have interest in other things a lot more, but I actually don't. I actually like tennis. And I've loved tennis all my life. But I mean, I want to be a little bit more, I don't want to use the word settled, but in terms of settled in one place, I want to be confined to not, you know, living out of a suitcase. I don't want that life anymore. I know I don't want that life anymore. I don't want to take clothes out of the suitcase. I want to go to my cupboard. I want to sleep in the same bed. You know, I want that kind of uniformity in my life, which I've not had for since I was, I've been traveling since I was 12 years old.
Yeah, so you want the feeling of coming home every single day instead of actually going home.
Actually going home occasionally for like a week and like, oh, it's time to leave. I was actually, in the last few months, I started having anxiety before I had to leave. I mean, believe it or not, I would be like, oh my God, I got to pack, like I have to leave. And then especially if I had to leave Izhan behind, I was like, okay, how am I going to do it? And then once I would go there, I would be fine. But it was the whole like build up to it, which would like kill me. Like for 5 days, I'm like getting all these anxiety attacks where I'm like, oh my God, like what am I going to do? And you know, so it, and that's when you know it's time that you don't want that as badly anymore. And I've not gotten here just by thinking about this. I've had help. I've had therapy. I mean, it is a big change and transition in my life. And it is a very, very big decision that you make. The only thing that you've done all your life, you're stopping that. And you might be evolving from it, but you're still stopping what I'm going to stop competing, stop walking onto center courts when the crowd's cheering for you. Feeling of losing and winning, all that stuff is going to stop. There's no feeling that can replicate it. There's nothing that I can do that can replicate that feeling, right? And so I've had help for it. And that's where I've been able to reach this place where I'm very settled in my head about it.
But, you know, I was just talking about mental toughness. And I want to tell you actually my story, that there was this one match that I was playing in Sangli, okay, in Maharashtra. You know, one of those games where there's like these really tough chicks and they're so good at the game. And I lost that game very, very badly. And it was that one moment that I realized that I lost because of not having enough mental toughness, right? So I want to ask, did you pay attention to it back then when you started? How much attention do you pay to it today?
So I think the awareness was probably there. I don't know if I paid like actual attention to it, so to say. I think that my parents played probably a bigger job in trying to keep me as mentally stable, for the lack of a better word, I think, in this scenario. Because obviously, since you have been around sport and, you know, with your dad and been around sport, whether you made it or not, just playing sport makes you understand the kind of pressure that goes into, you know, playing a sport and performing whatever level that may be at. And everybody's capacity to handle that pressure is different. And to be very honest, my parents were so, so cool that they actually gave me the choice always. They always gave me the choice to play. They always gave me the choice. But if I didn't want to play and I wanted to go for a birthday party, they were like, that's fine. You don't have to go and practice today. So, you know, I was very lucky to have parents who kind of knew that very fine line that came sort of in between putting enough pressure but not over-pressurizing the child. And I think that eventually, though, like, it was also my character that I loved performing under pressure. I loved feeling under pressure. And I think that is something that is part of who I am and it's part of my personality. I feel that I'm the best under pressure.
Yeah, you perform and at your optimum.
And I feel that if you speak to a lot of people who have won a lot in their lives or have been number one in the world or you know, anybody in the world that has really played at that highest level, the difference between them and the person who's 10 in the world isn't the tennis. It is actually how they play on those points when they're under pressure. So that is really what I feel like I used to thrive under pressure. I was like, oh, it's a pressure point. I'm like, the only thing I used to think was, you know, I'm feeling the pressure, but I'm better than her under pressure. Whether I was or not was a separate issue. It was the mindset that I had. So I think that I'm more aware of it now. At that time, I kind of just went along with it and I didn't really understand it as much. But as I grew older, I understood that this is my strength. I actually like this situation.
Wow. Okay. But do you think that, you know, you must have seen a lot of emerging tennis stars, right? And do you think that they are paying enough attention? Do you think coaches today are paying enough attention to this?
I think that people struggle to find that line. You know, it's a very blurred line and it's very, very easy to cross that line of where you are making a child feel that they need to win in order to be good at a level, you know, if they're 12 years old or they're 10 years old, you know, that is not it. I'll tell you a small story. When I was much younger, when I was 8, 9, 10, I used to never cry after I lost matches. And, you know, and I used to see all these kids crying after they used to lose the match. And I used to always wonder why they're crying, you know.
I cried while I was playing the match.
Yeah, so it was a very innocent thought in my head. I'm like, why are they crying? Like, I don't understand. So my parents made it a point that whether I won the match or I lost a match, I would get an ice cream after the match, you know. So they would be like, so it was not like if I lost the match, I wouldn't get that ice cream. It's a very small thing, but that made me realize that winning or losing was not going to make me who I am. It was just going to build me into being better at what I was going to do and being the better version or best version of myself as a tennis player. So that is how my parents kind of handled it. And I think it's such a good example because like parents used to come to my parents and be like, why doesn't your daughter cry after she loses a match? Like, does she not care enough? And my parents would be like, no, she cares a lot, but it's not our life. It's just part of our lives. And you know, and that's how we kind of took life. And it's amazing. I'm sure there were more talented girls than me who were playing at the time who didn't make it. Maybe because of the pressure, you know, maybe because of the other pressures that come with it. But I was able to do that, you know, fortunately.
Yeah, you know, speaking of pressure, I used to feel like everyone's watching me for being my dad's daughter. And everyone just expects me to be as great as him. But I feel like it's different, right? I mean, and they say talent.
So I think that's why I said everybody's capacity to deal with that pressure and everybody's threshold is different. And, you know, the only thing I can relate to that, what you're saying, is if my son plays cricket or if my son plays tennis. And like, literally when I got pregnant, the first thing that I was asked is he going to play tennis or cricket? You know, I was like 4 months pregnant. So I'm saying, do I really want him to play tennis or cricket? Of course not. Exactly. But I think that it is very unfortunate that we live in a place where they think that you have to follow a legacy and you have to be greater than that legacy. And that's just not fair on the person that is going through that, you know, because at the end of the day, the odds are against you. What are the odds that two people in a family are going to be the greatest ever of all time?
Exactly. I mean, the odds are the anomaly, right?
So yeah, I get it. You know, I get it because I have a child now, and I get that. Would I want him to feel that, what you're talking about? Because I've had this conversation with many people who've had such great parents in terms of what they have achieved. And they've not been able to make it in the thing that they thought that they would want to. Like, you couldn't make it in sport, but you found another path for yourself.
Yeah, and, you know? I had fun while doing it. I mean, tennis was just too much pressure for me because I knew, oh my God, everyone's watching me for who I am. Also, I'm like built like my dad, so that doesn't help physically. And I think everyone asks you, don't you want to grow out of your parents' shadow? And I'm like, no, I don't. It's a great shadow to be in, you know?
Yeah, why? Why would you want to grow out of it?
Yeah, it's bizarre. So, yeah. Our kids would be fine. You know, I used to hear, I remember at Prac Tennis, where I used to play tennis. I don't know if you played there.
Wow, I haven't heard that in a long time,
right? Practice. Rama Rao, sir. Yeah. And I used to always hear about you. And everyone said, you know, Sania's great, but her mother is the one that sort of holds it all together. Is that true? How big of an inspiration or force is your mom in your life?
So my mom is... I don't know, like, I think everybody's moms are there for them in different ways, right? Like, some mothers bring stability, some mothers bring strength, some mothers bring power, some mothers bring grit. My mother brought all of it together. You know, she was the one who, you know, if I tell my mom, Mom, I want to go to the moon, she'll be like, okay, you can do it. And that's how she is. She's always been that way. So for her, she felt, and that's good and bad. I mean, in my case, it worked out, right? But she was like, yeah, I mean, my daughter can do anything, what she wants to do. If you put your mind to it, you can achieve it. And she has always been my biggest support. And, you know, she's very camera shy, so she doesn't really come out on camera so much, and she doesn't really come out and speak. But she was the one who took me to the tennis court the first day. She fought with the coach because he said, no, she's too small, she can't play. And my mom's like, what's your problem? Like, he said, I want my daughter to play when she's six. Like,
she
what
can
is
play.
Your
she
issue?
She can hold a racket up.
And yeah, and a month later, he called my parents and he was like, you have to come and watch her play. I've never seen a six-year-old play like that.
Wow.
You know, so she was the driving force behind this, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's not really common for your parents to be like, all right, from a middle-class Muslim Hyderabad background, like, oh yeah, you must play tennis. I mean, that doesn't really happen at all.
Yeah, it's not the obvious choice. That's true. But, you know, you mentioned that you were really small, right? When that coach called your mom up and said, listen, she's great. So you obviously knew, everyone around you knew that you were great. You were better than the rest. When did you know? And how do you know when you're that young? Because I feel like we spend most of our childhood or sort of early teens just self-doubt. You know, are we good? Am I good looking?
I don't think that I knew then. But I think that I knew when I was 12. And I don't know if you remember when we were younger. And we're almost the same age. So you probably remember. We used to have these zonals. And then we used to have the masters, the Adidas masters that used to happen. And I was 12 and I had won the Adidas under 14 and under 16 on the same day after like going through the whole zonals. And then I had gotten my first ever endorsement with Adidas. I was 12. And before that, the biggest win for me until then was I was 8 and I beat this 15-year-old girl in the state ranking tournament, which was an under 16 tournament. So I was always better than my age. But at 12, I think is when I really realized, like, I think I'm good at what I'm doing. Like, I think I'm pretty good at this, you know? And that was the day that is so vividly in my memory, where I remember winning those two matches. I played two finals back to back on the same day, won the under 14, won the under 16. And Adidas was like, all right, we're going to take her.
We've got
and
the golden
I
girl.
Was like, yeah. So, I mean, that was the day when I think realized, even though 12 may seem like a very young age, but you grow very fast when you're playing sport. You mature faster than you probably should even. And, you know, by the time I was obviously 15, I won Junior Wimbledon. So, you know, and then after that, I was very sure this is what I wanted to do.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Do you think, I've always wondered this, right? Tennis is a sport that you play on your own, right? It's individual. It's almost in isolation. You're kind of stuck there with this body and your mind and this opponent, right? Do you think that prepares you, tennis especially, prepares you to be a little bit more of a hustler? Like, you can give yourself a pep talk very quickly, or you can like talk yourself in and out of things just because you're on your own in your head so much.
You know, we always, as tennis players, like with our friends, we like joke and we're the only mad people that are like on the court who are having a full-blown conversation with ourselves.
Exactly.
Right? Full-blown conversation. We're like, come on, you can do it. Like, what are you doing? And then we're getting angry at ourselves. We're pissed. And then we're like all pumped up and then we're happy. I mean, the amount of emotions that you feel within one tennis match of 2 hours is like, you come out of it. So that's why I always say my true personality comes out on the tennis court. Like, that's who I am. Because I really don't care how many live cameras are there. I really don't care how many people are watching in the stadium. I don't care. I just care about winning. And how am I going to win? That means I got to talk to myself and be... I mean, is there any other profession where people talk to themselves out loud and like...
and like scream like, at themselves, I mean, like there's rage, like, there's crazy? Happiness, all in one.
All in one. So like, I mean, it is just so... The emotions that come are so raw and so real while you're playing and competing. So, I mean, it's just something that it actually amazes me when I think of it. You know, sometimes I'm watching tennis matches and I'm seeing like Medvedev is talking to himself and then he's having this entire conversation about like the clay.
A monologue.
And he's like, what did this is? Yeah, he's like, this is the worst surface in the world. And there's nobody. He's talking to himself out loud.
Yeah.
You know, as athletes, and you probably, I don't know if you know that from your dad or not, as athletes, we're pretty self-centered people.
Oh, yes, you know, I know.
And that is not really your dad's fault or my fault.
Yeah,
it is just
the nature of the beast.
It's the nature of the beast. Exactly. It's what our profession demands of us. If we don't put ourselves first in terms of a situation, whether that's as simple as, okay, today I don't feel like eating rice because I feel bloated. I want to eat something else. The 6 people in your team have got to do what you got to do. I mean, at the end of the day, maybe they don't feel like eating pasta, but they got to go and eat the pasta because at the end of the day, that's the requirement of the person who's going to perform the next day. So I'm saying simple things like that. So it's all about my warm-up, my time, my practice, my eating. You know, I want to do this. I don't want to do this. And then when you stop playing tennis or stop being an athlete, a lot changes, especially when you become a mother and then nothing is about yourself anymore. So I think that that is something that is very, very important. But if we are not like that, we can't make it. You can't make it because you have to put yourself in front of every need and everyone else's need in that moment and be like, what is best for me to be able to go and perform the best day tomorrow? And what is required of me? If that requires me to sleep at 6 p.m., I'm going to sleep at 6 p.m. I don't really care if you have dinner plans, you know? So that is just something that becomes part of, and that's very important to have that team that understands that it's not selfish. It's more about just prioritizing yourself in that situation.
Yeah, it's also the road to greatness. I don't think that you can be great.
I agree. But like, I mean, that obviously causes a lot of, you know, it's very different when you're outside of that, right? Like, because you're so used to that when you come outside of that world and all of a sudden you're like, what? Like, we can't do what I want? Like, why is that? You know, so it is a very different sort of mindset that you go in with. And you have to find that balance again of being that non-self-centered person when needed. In relationships, whether it's with your parents, with your siblings, with your boyfriends or husbands or wives, you've got to find that balance where you're like, okay, now I'm not that tennis player. Now I'm not that person who needs to do this. And it's okay if I put myself second right now in this situation, you know? So that is a balance that you kind of need to find.
Yeah. And speaking of partners, speaking of people that you have sort of collaborated with, worked with, played games with, you picked Martina Hingis as, I mean, you had a long association with her playing together. How was it when you met her for the first time? And what was that? Did you pick her for her temperament? Because I hear great things about that.
Actually, I've known Martina for a long time. I remember she absolutely kicked my butt in Calcutta when we played. I mean, I was like, oh my God, this is the worst day of my life. Imagine a packed crowd in India. She's absolutely destroying me. We go 2 days later to Seoul in Korea and we draw each other again in the second round. And I beat her, you know, and that is why sport is such an amazing leveler, right? So we've had that respect for each other. It actually just happened. So happened, it actually happened in Dubai where we were playing with our respective partners and we were both kind of on that verge of like, should we change? She kind of called me or approached me and said, oh, look, do you want to like try? And I was like, you know what? I'm actually entered with so-and-so, whoever I was playing at that point. And she was like, okay, let's discuss after next week. And I said, give me a week and let me see how it goes and then we'll take a call. It was that casual. I mean, we sat in a room and had that conversation and then we went to Doha. We both played with our respective partners. It worked out. We were like, okay, fine, let's try and enter Indian Wells Miami and let's see what happens. So it was literally that. It was mutual respect. And also, it was the fact that we both understood that we would do great together with the way that our strengths and weaknesses were. We were able to consolidate our strengths together. And she was able to cover my weaknesses and vice versa. I was able to do it for her. So we just went into Indian Wells Miami and we won Indian Wells. We won Miami. We went into Charleston. We were like, should I go? I was about 4 in the world at the time when we started playing. So we had this thing, I was like, oh, I'll get to number 1 if I play Charleston, should we go and play? She's like, okay, let's do it. So we went on a different surface, we won Charleston. We were on a 15-match trot. And we're like, oh, okay, I guess this is working. And I guess after the rest is history, we won Wimbledon, US Open that year, Australian Open, the championships. I mean, yeah, we didn't lose for about 6 months. So, I mean, it just, with some people, it just kind of
clicks.
Mm-hmm. It just clicks. And she is one of the smartest tennis players to have ever played the game, the most intelligent. And I got to see that firsthand. The way she sees the game and the court is almost like chess. She knows exactly where the ball is going to go before the ball is hit. Her anticipation to that is incredible. And our temperaments matched. You know, I wouldn't say we were best friends, but we were good enough friends. And we like to keep it that way because when you're in a professional setup, which is like demand you to be together 30 weeks a year and you're practicing together, playing matches together, going through all these emotions together, to then go and have dinner every day together is a little too much. For, you know,
you can't be braiding each other's hair, for sure.
Exactly. So we were both very like, you know, we were both very similar in that, at that aspect. We loved keeping it very real and we loved winning and we were doing it so well together. And, you know, then we went on this winning streak of 42 or 43 matches, whatever it was. And yeah, it was just, I mean, both of us still tell each other that you were my best partner ever, even in all the, because that kind of success, you know, you don't really see it very often.
Yeah. So, because my dad used to travel and he would bring back all the cool tennis gear. Okay. So you remember the ball holder? That was like
at the back.
At the back. And then I had like a pair of tights where you could like it had a pocket that you could just put the ball
underneath.
In. Yeah.
That still exists, by the way.
Also, that's back then, it was like, I was like, they were like, where did you get it from? And I was like, my dad got it for me. So I had the bad reputation of being an average player, but it had the best wardrobe. And I remember there was this one game I was playing and there was a like a tennis player whose dad was always around. He came to me and he said, you know, don't worry, you can be like Anna Kournikova because she always looked good. But, you know, even Serena Williams, right? People have been talking about the way she dresses and her hairstyles and everything that she matches for years. Why is it such a curse to be good at your job, good at the sport, and also look great while you're doing it?
So I think that is just that's not really a curse. I think what happens is, I don't think many people know Kournikova was number 4 in the world in singles and number 1 in the world in doubles. Right? And that's who people said didn't know how to play tennis. So that shows you that a woman is first judged by the way that she looks and then by what she does. So it's not really about how good or bad you look. It is the nature of our society, the entire world. And it's more pronounced in some countries, less pronounced in some countries. That is the nature of our society to first, when a woman walks in the room, before she gives you her CV, they first look at her. And the first thing is, oh, she's hot or she's not.
Yeah. She's probably right? dumb or she's probably like...
Yeah, because she's better. You know, so I mean, how many people know that Anna Kournikova is 4 in the world? She's won multiple Grand Slams. She's been number 1 in the world in doubles with Martina Hingis.
And dated Enrique Iglesias. I mean, that's... It's all fine. It can all coexist.
So I'm saying... Exactly. So they people believe that to be a good athlete, if you're not like masculine looking or if you're not like, and if you're not like you can't speak properly, you must be bad at what you're doing. You're just basically playing. And just see the reputation that she, I mean, after winning so much, imagine how painful it must be for her to hear then, oh yeah, Kournikova, who didn't know how to play tennis. And that is, I don't think there is any male athlete in the world that you hear that about.
Exactly. It's a female thing.
I don't see anybody talking about Ronaldo posing shirtless without clothes, doing whatever he wants, showing his 8 packs or 6 packs or how many ever packs he has, and he's still winning and doing what he's doing. Nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about the fact that, oh, yeah, he's a good-looking guy, but hey, Messi's better, you know? Like, no, like it's not about that, right? So we as a society need to change the fact that a woman cannot be judged by the way she looks rather than what she does. And that is something that women like you and me have to talk about. And men don't agree to it most of the time because, you know, when you show a mirror to them, they're like, oh, no, I'm not like that. The others might
you're
be like
touchy,
that.
You're being touchy or you're being sensitive, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not about being sensitive. That is the fact. I mean, I don't see 2 men entering a room and being judged on the way of their appearance. It happens usually to women. And if you are good at what you do, like if you play tennis... It happened to me many times when I was, you know, I would be seen at a one-off party after I lost a match, God forbid, in my 30 years career. And they were like, oh, she's so distracted. She's into this whole film industry. And everybody's like, you've got all these industry friends. And I'm like, I literally have 4 friends. Like,
exactly.
I literally have 4 friends. And I just like, you just learn to live with it. But it is a dialogue that needs to happen, you know? So it can work both the ways. So
yeah. Talk to me about the game that you played with Serena Williams. Were you 18, 19? How old were you?
I was 18.
You were 18. Did that change your life? Did that change your approach to the game?
100%.
Hmm.
That just changed me. It changed my entire graph of my life. It changed who I was. It made me grow up overnight. It changed everything in my life. And you know how many years has it been? I'm 36. It's been 18 years and people still talk to me about that game.
I saw that game. I did not move.
Yeah, but this is what I mean. So I'm saying it changed everything for me. It actually maybe even made me who I am today, you know, in some weird way. And it was a loss that made me who I was. Imagine that, right? So it was incredible to be able to compete against probably the greatest of all time in our sport or one of the greatest athletes of all time. But I do think that for me, it is incredible that a loss kind of made my journey. It was not a win, if that makes sense. A loss to Serena Williams at that point made me who I was and who I am today. And the way that my career graph went after that, going from, I don't know, I was like 180 or 200 in the world to going 30 in the world in the span of 10 months was something that it was catching everybody's imagination, including mine, to be very honest. And I think that people just... What happened was at that point also people never... And we always saw Serena Williams, we saw Venus Williams, and we always saw these great champions. We never thought that we as Indians can ever compete against them. And then all of a sudden, they had this 18-year-old girl who was competing against these champions that we've only thought that are present on television, that they're not really existing.
Like demigods.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about your social media game, okay, recently, because I follow you. And I was like, she's suddenly having so much fun. I feel like you're having a lot more fun, right, on your social media because you're only doing these reels with Anam and your mom and they're like these little
small
plays.
My mom is so into it.
Yeah.
My mom's so into it. Yeah. My mom's like, should I change? Should we do a reel today? I'm like, no, mom. Like, we're not going to keep doing reels. So, no, I actually... have started taking, I mean, I always did, but I think more so now, I've started taking social media with a fist of salt rather than a pinch of salt. And I think that the only way to be on social media is to have fun. Because honestly, the way things have gone over the last few years on social media, it is extremely toxic. And the only way, if you want to be there, you just have to not take social media seriously. And that's just something that I've learned over the last few years, especially. You have to, not the good, not the bad. And especially not the good, because then good changes into bad within minutes.
Yeah, you know? So you can't control it. It's just like you say something and it's just misunderstood.
It's misunderstood. And if we sit and take everything to heart, honestly, we cannot function. We cannot do this. We cannot be who we are.
And I don't think you can be everything to everyone. You can never be everything to everyone.
You can never be everything. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult enough to be everything to one or two people. Imagine being everything to everyone.
Okay, to wrap this up, I'm going to ask you some curious questions that I cannot leave you without. If you could go back and replay any one game from your career, which one would it be and why?
I would love to go back and replay the match that I played against Kuznetsova in Dubai, right after I had played Serena. Kuznetsova was 4 in the world and the reigning US Open champion at that point. And I had won that match, but I want to replay it because honestly, that one match, I don't know if I felt like I was in that kind of zone, so to say, that athletes talk about ever. I mean, I was in this zone where I literally couldn't hear or see anything else except the tennis ball. And I was seeing the tennis ball as big as a football at that point. And I would love to have that feeling again.
Mm. Okay. How does Sania Mirza celebrate winning a Grand Slam? Like once the cameras have stopped rolling.
Do you know what I did after I won Wimbledon? So we were supposed to go for the Wimbledon gala, obviously, which is the dinner that happens. I slept. I was like, I can't. I can't do anything. Like I came back and it was just so surreal. And then I came back to the house that we had rented for those 2 weeks. And I came back and I lay down in bed. I didn't speak to anybody in the house. I went just lay down in the bed and I said, okay, I think I'm going to close my eyes for a bit. It was like 1 a.m. because by the time we finished, it was like 10:30. And I came back and I was like, you know what? Let me open this laptop and just replay if that actually happened. So I opened the laptop, I started replaying the last few minutes of the match. And honestly, I think that's when it actually hit me that I won Wimbledon. It was not before. It was in my bed and I was like, oh my goodness, we just won Wimbledon. We were 5-2 down in the third set and we came back to a standing ovation and we won Wimbledon. And literally it gave me goosebumps and I slept. And it was the most peaceful sleep I've had in years.
Sweet sleep after winning. Sweet sleep, yeah. Okay, and the last one is, what is the one message that you would give your son 20 years from now? So think that he's, 20, 25 years old. What would the message be?
The message would be that you should be whoever and whatever you want to be. Because that is very important for me. For me as a person, it's very important to, and no matter how much outside of the box that might be, you have to back yourself, because if you don't back yourself, nobody else will.
Yeah. You know, my greatest takeaway from this conversation with you is that think like there is no box. Forget out of the box. Just think like there is no box. So create one for yourself, you know. And just be you. Have fun while doing it all. In the next episode of How I Masaba, I am speaking to Chef Garima Arora, the first Indian woman to win a Michelin star. Tune in next week.
You were listening to How I Masaba only on Luminary. The podcast is produced by Monisha Singh Katyal and Rainshine Entertainment. Ritika Bajaj is our creative producer and Palash Kulkarni is our executive producer. The research for this episode was done by Anushka Mukherjee. The mix engineer for this episode is Arya Nanji. Artist management by Versus Entertainment LLP. The music supervisor for the episode is Ankur Srivastav. The episode was recorded at Island City Studios, Mumbai.
Hold up.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.